racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Once again, a big welcome back into the Grow Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Bob Bubka. Very proud to be alongside Jay Randolph Jr. You probably know him a lot better as STL Golf Geek. Well, Jay, it seems like the new normal has arrived. PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, the commissioner. No fans at any of the upcoming PGA Tour events all the way through, and including the Tour Championship, which is the week of September 7th. We kind of thought it was coming, but now it's been, the message has been delivered.
It has, Bob, and the remaining questions, I think at this point, as it relates to fans, relate to the two majors. I think the USGA will follow suit, and there'll be no fans at the United States Open, even though it appears New York is one of the best places in the country. I don't think they want to bring that into play. And then we'll wonder about November and Augusta, if you will. So, you know, fans did not make that magic on Sunday. The players made the magic. And once again, the ratings for the game are up, the television ratings. I think interest is up as high as it can be, and especially this week with the return of you-know-who. So, you know, it's okay. It's okay not to have fans. We're going to hear some different thoughts about that, but I think the tour makes a wise move.
Well, you made a great point there, Jay, about the fan appeal to the television viewers. When I think that last week, okay, it action-packed as could possibly be, and there was no Bryson DeChambeau, and there was no Tiger Woods. Now, this week, there's going to be a Bryson DeChambeau and a Tiger Woods, along with everything that we had last week. Simply seems incredible.
This is truly what you could refer to as a mini-major. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Just because of the field strength, a lot of planets colliding with guys playing, the whole second week factor. I mean, for the golf geeks, this is a huge week. There won't be a bigger week until the PGA Championship out at Harding Park. I mean, this is the week. This is kind of the culmination. It had been their hope to have fans. They set up the – I mean, this field is – you know, it's stronger than grandmother's breath. I mean, it's fantastic. So I think this is going to be an awesome week, and I think it was a great week last week. The tour is thriving.
And you said fantastic. I would think that – that and anything above that in the along the lines of being a description is all we can say about Colin Morikawa. I mean, the young kid, he wins an event, he makes his first 21 cuts, finally misses a cut. What does he do? Takes a week off, come back. He comes back and he wins. I mean, that is, you know, just lofty stuff.
It certainly was, shooting a final round 66, doing what he had to do as Justin Thomas held a three-shot lead with three holes to go. And JT was looking a little off, you know, kind of scrambling to keep that lead, and then made a mistake. And then Morikawa makes the birdie and another bogey from JT, and all of a sudden we're in a playoff. And the guy you've chased down drops a 50-footer. A 50-footer to put birdie in after you put it about 24 feet on top of him. And this 23-year-old kid drains it and then goes on and wins. I mean, we've talked about, Bob, the ability and the way the young player now handles pressure and the situation. And my goodness, Morikawa did that.
I'm going to have a comment about that 25-footer. That Morikawa made, that he had to make to keep the playoff alive. But first, let's listen to what Morikawa himself had to say after that impressive victory.
To go up against Justin in a playoff, he wasn't going to give it to me, that's for sure. And he definitely didn't for the start. You know, making that 50-footer on that first playoff hole, you know, just forcing me to make something. And then we go to the second playoff hole, and he sticks it, and he's 35, 40 yards behind me, and he sticks it to whatever, 10, 12 feet. So, you know, I just knew I had to keep putting on the pressure. I couldn't give away any shots. If I just hit quality shots, and you slowly wear them down, slowly give yourself a chance to make birdie, and, you know, at one point, hopefully they'll drop. If not, you know, I got a fortunate break with Justin having to chip out there. Throughout the playoff, you know, I got a lot more comfortable, especially after that playoff in Colonial. I felt a lot more comfortable now, but I felt way more comfortable after that, making that birdie putt on the first playoff hole. I mean, that was huge. You know, I had to make it after he made it. And, you know, from there on, I just knew. Hit fairways, hit greens, put the pressure on him. He obviously had a chance in that second hole playoff, but I'm happy.
Well, he certainly has a right to be happy, and this is what he had to say regarding that first playoff hole.
You know, if we had fans, I think everything would have been a little different. I mean, I would have had to almost wait another 2 minutes just to even hit that next putt because of the fans, you know, roars and everything and mumbles that just after making a 50-footer, you know, those are type of putts that, you know, you pretty much make to win. But once he made that, I knew my mind switched straight to, all right, you know, it's make or we go home and we finish second place again. So I already knew, you know, what that putt was like. Somewhat from Justin's regulation putt, I knew it kind of trickled off to the right, and you know, I just trusted my line, hit a good putt, and you know, finally we caught that left edge, and we had to go on and play another two.
I don't know how you feel, Jay, but I'm pretty much convinced. Had that green been surrounded by the normal amount of fans that surround that green, when that putt went in by Justin Thomas with fans, I don't think there was any chance that Morikawa would have been able to recoup and drain that putt of his. Interested to hear what you have to say.
Well, I think the fact that Morikawa raised the point, he's the one that said if there had been fans around that green, it would have affected everything. And we know that. I mean, you're still obviously affected by the fact that the man drained it, but you're not getting shell-shocked by the applause and the cheers and the amazement and have to sit through it and probably go around the hole a couple of times. And there's no question. That's a perfect example of a different scenario. More than likely, he might have missed that putt, but he didn't, and I appreciate the honesty and the maturity of a 23-year-old kid having the wherewithal to talk about that and admit that, you know, a lot of guys would say, well, I'd have made the putt whether there were 200 million people there. It doesn't matter, you know, but this guy at least says, hey, it might have been different.
We've watched a lot of golf together over the years, Mr. Randolph, and
yep.
I know for a fact that up until last Sunday, as far as I can remember, nobody ever made a 50-footer and then have somebody make basically a 25-footer on top of him to keep the playoff alive. I mean, that length putt, you know, in this sudden death situation just seems mind-boggling as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and you know, again, as he said, this is Justin Thomas he's playing. I mean, this is one of the golden boys. And, you know, you have to believe that while Morikawa is creating a name for himself and a fan base and that type of thing, the people would have been rooting for JT, especially since he let it slip away a little bit in regulation. So, I mean, it was about as good as it gets. I mean, one of the best playoff holes of all time.
Yeah, I think your description is certainly very accurate about that. Well, Justin Thomas certainly had a golden opportunity, probably felt very confident after the 50-footer found the bottom of the cup that he was going to win, but he didn't. But this is what he had to say after it was all over.
Yeah, it was quite the bizarre day. It would have been a fun day to have some fans, just in terms of the ups and downs and the shot making, and a lot of fun, great shots. But I yeah, I mean, I got off to a bad start, and I really, really fought hard and grinded hard and hit a lot of great shots there in the middle and near the end of the round. And it's completely unacceptable to give up a three-shot lead with three to go. It's I'm upset and disappointed in myself, but at the end of the day, it's over with now, and I just need to take some time this afternoon and tonight to build on it and figure out what I can do better going into next week.
You talk about a class act, Jay. Justin Thomas has enough class probably to go around for the whole PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, I had a hard time on Sunday, to be honest, because I'm a huge JT guy. But as you know, I love seeing these young players. So what I enjoyed was the back and forth between the two. But clearly Justin Thomas is pretty close to on top of his game. And when he's that way, he's going to be contending each week, and the wins will come.
Well, I know you're very humble, but, boy, you have been touting Morikawa on the In the Grill Room show for the last several weeks, and I think we just got a little glimpse of the potential greatness of this young man. And what I'm so impressed about, Jay, is certainly he has all the shots in the bag. He has the maturity, he has the composure. But what really impresses me is how well he handles himself off the golf course. We have another great ambassador for this sport of ours called golf.
Well, I think the thing that may set him apart just a little bit from the young guys, and I'm even going to throw Bryson in this to a certain degree, he seems to really handle his emotions well on a golf course. Now, other people, hey, I understand completely that getting fired up and getting upset sometimes gets you going. But, you know, this week's going to be interesting for Rahm. He shot 64 in the final round last week, and I know it's going to be, quote-unquote, a different style or different type of golf course and different hole locations and all that jazz. But I'll be interested to see how Rahm, a guy who sometimes when he's not right gets a little emotional, it affects him, how he comes back off that 64 from Sunday. That's one of the fascinating things about this next week, Bob, is so many of the guys played last week. So many of the guys have had history of success at Muirfield Village. You know, it hadn't happened since 1957 where they played back-to-back golf courses. So this is a unique thing in the history of the tour.
Yeah, and of course, we'd be remiss without mentioning the name Victor Hovland, third place finish. He's one of these young, talented players that certainly going to leave his mark. Great to see reigning U.S. Open champion Gary Woodland. He gets a couple extra months. The U.S. Open normally played in June. This year, postponed back to September. Gary Woodland with a fifth-place finish. Jason Day, who happens to be a member there at Muirfield, he makes a cut, top 10 finish, good for him. Phil Mickelson seems to show flashes, Jay, maybe a round, maybe a stretch of holes, but over 72 holes of late, not playing that well, finished in a tie for 58th.
Well, and let's be honest, that becomes more regular as you get older, where you might be able to have a good round like he did, I believe, in the opening round, but not the weekend that Phil wanted. Let me tell you something. Gary Woodland is looking really good. I mean, so many of the guys are looking good, but Gary Woodland has really impressed me. After we hear about my home, Gateway National Golf Links in Madison, Illinois, we'll talk about the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide at that same golf course, Muirfield Village. And we'll hear from Jack, the host of the tournament. And we'll hear from Tiger, who's won it a bunch of times. We'll hear from both right after this. Enjoy golf as it was meant to be played at Gateway National Golf Links, a stunning links-style course in the St. Louis area. After all, it is the number one public golf course in St. Louis, and it's the only one with bent grass fairways. Only public course in the region with bent grass fairways. Gateway National offers golfers the rare opportunity to return to the rich traditions of the game with rolling links in the heart of the country. Gentle mounds and plenty of tall grasses. Spacious fairways, and of course, when you play number three, well, you just aim for the Gateway Arch. That's right, the iconic St. Louis Arch is right there. Gateway National Golf Links, the number one public golf course in St. Louis, and the only one with bent grass, with a friendly staff to make your day a memorable one. To make your tee time the best way and the best rates are online at gatewaynational.com. An added perk, if you live here in the St. Louis area, you purchase the season pass. Walters Golf Management manages eight other properties, and you'll get playing privileges at those golf courses. Gateway National, always in great shape. And remember that website, gatewaynational.com. That's where you'll find the best rates, gatewaynational.com. Don't forget, if you'd like to drop us a line or give us your thoughts or opinion on the show, we'd love to hear from you. I'm STL Golf Geek on Twitter, while Bob, the VOG, the voice of golf, Bob Bubka, VOG. Check us out on Twitter.
And if you haven't played Gateway National yet, I strongly urge you do so. One of the best tracks in the area. One of the best events of the year coming up this week, the Memorial Tournament, presented by Nationwide defending champion Patrick Cantlay. Real solid field, Jay, 132 players. The winner gets a three-year exemption, gets a huge check, and then what I consider probably the nicest perk by winning, you get that handshake as Jack waits for you down at that 72nd hole. Those are memories that you'll take with you for a lifetime.
No question about it. To have the Golden Bear there and give you the handshake, it is a special event. And every year, kind of, Jack gives a little state of the state and state of the game and state of Jack. And he's done it again. Let's hear what Jack had to say.
Now, hosting for 45 years is the first time I've only hosted a half a group, just players, players and press. And anyway, it's a little different, obviously. We prepared the same way. The golf course is good. Most of the guys probably played here last week. The golf course will be a little different this week. Greens will be a couple feet faster. Rough will be a week older and deeper, deeper in debt, as they say. And green should be firmer unless we get too much rain. But outside of that, I know that the tour did a pretty darn good job from what I could see going around yesterday, that they tried to spread the divots as much as they could and try to use some different tees so they didn't have the same landing area all the time and things we'll have in the Memorial Tournament. So we're looking forward to it. I mean, we're delighted to be just playing the golf tournament.
Well, Jack, it's going to be completely different this week. No fans at the Memorial. Never thought I'd see the day. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it was the player's choice and the tour's choice at this point to say we would prefer not to have fans. And because of the issue that they had, if one of them got sick, then not only were they exposed their caddy, they'd exposed the players they've played with. They'd have to go sit for 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, the tour's shortened already. And so it made it harder for them to make a living. And I understand that. And I think the tour probably made the right decision as relates to the Memorial Tournament. Maybe we are a little too early for the galleries, and we didn't have a problem with it. Because we would have loved to had, my goal of putting on the golf tournament is to bring major championship type golf back to Columbus, Ohio, where I grew up. That's why this whole event is being played. It's not being played for the players. It's being played for Central Ohio, and so it's. But I understand it, I think it was the right decision, and So when you're not really, I mean, even the governor was liked our plan and went along with it and was going to allow us to start to have gallery and open up to spectator sports. So, you know, I applaud the governor and I thank him very much for his great efforts to try to help us and the work that we went in by Dan Sullivan and his team here and all the things that they put together to set up a plan that would work and would pass by the state of Ohio. But in the end, the players, you know, you can't have a dance without the dancing girls. And so... And I can understand where some might be very hesitant. So I think we're probably doing the right thing right now, and we're going to have a good tournament either way.
Well, it goes without saying, always great to hear from the Golden Bear. And if that wasn't enough, right afterwards, we had an opportunity to have what Tiger had to say. You know, it's been a long time since he played on the PGA Tour. We have to go back to February. I think it was 151 days without any Tiger. But here's his comments as he gets ready to come back to the tour.
That's the risk that I'm taking. That's risk that all of us are now taking. I know the tour's done a fantastic job of setting up the safety of and trying to ensure that all of us are protected and are safe. But it is a risk that we are now, you know, undertaking when you outside your property and around individuals that you don't know where they've been or what they've been doing. So, but the screening, the testing we've done, the protections that we've tried to implement on the tour have shown that we've had to make adjustments. But it's a risk that I'm willing to take.
And Bob, of course, you know, Tiger brought so many fans to the game of golf. He gives his thoughts on playing with no fans there.
It's just the energy is different. There's nothing to feed off of. Energy-wise, I mean, that you make a big putt, or you make a big par, or make a big chip, or hit a hell of a shot, there's no one there. And that's one of the more interesting things that it'll be, you know, going forward. And I think this is going to be set up for not just in a short term, but for the foreseeable future, for sure.
And finally, we knew it would come up. Tiger was asked about Bryson DeChambeau bulking up.
He's figured out a way to increase distance and maximize his efficiency with not only his driver, but all of his clubs, but in particular the driver. What Bryson's done is no easy task. I mean, he's got to put in the time and put in the reps, and he's figured it out. He's gotten stronger, faster, bigger, and has created more speed. But more importantly, he's hitting it further. But let's look at the fact that he's hitting it as straight as he is. That's probably the most difficult thing to do. The further you hit it, the more the tangent goes, you know, more crooked, more along its line. And so the fact that he's figured that out and he's been able to rein in the foul balls has, to me, been equal as impressive as his gains off the tee distance-wise.
Well, and Bob, speaking of Bryson overpowering golf courses, the RNA, their chief, Martin Slummers, has said that they will take a look at the distance factor. In fact, he said that they will rein in the big hitting bombers. Gosh, I wish I could do a British accent. Threatening to change the game forever with brute force. Well, I guess my answer in one way would be good luck, Martin. We'll see. I don't know. We've talked about it a lot. The man who hosts this week, Jack Nicklaus, has talked about the ball and the club, and now we're talking about the bulk. And I remember my dad telling me about a guy named Frank Stranahan that was actually at the British Open in '54 when Hogan won, and Stranahan carried weights and was a muscle man, the Toledo muscle man, if you will. But now they're gonna talk about the ball again or something, Bob, to try and even this thing out.
Well, I would not want to be in the position of Martin Slumbers. Just think about it. All right, some possible cures for Bryson DeChambeau. All right, outlaw the driver. That'll make Bryson a little shorter. Oh, wait a minute. That makes all the other players shorter, too. Roll back the golf ball 50 yards. Oh, no. Then all the other players are 50 yards shorter than Bryson is now. I mean, I don't see how you can identify affecting only the guy that hits it really far without affecting, you know, the rest of the field. Now, come on, you have your pulse on the game better than just about anybody in the country. You're the ambassador there at Gateway National. How many players do you think, if you took a survey, would agree with rolling back the golf ball or making the driver so it doesn't hit it as far? I mean, you'd have mutiny on your hands at Gateway National.
Again, we're not seeing handicaps drop at dramatic rates. I mean, this affects a small population, maybe 3% of the golfing public, and I include the pros at that level. Maybe it's 1% or 2%. It's a very minuscule number, and I guess you'd then have to throw in all the mini tours and all the top line amateur players. You know, I mean, that's what they're trying to do is that. But the majority of people, absolutely not, Bob. I do think at some point we are going to see something, whether it be Augusta or a combination of the RNA and the USGA, really have to get serious about the ball. And at least you can't rein in bulk if it's being done the proper way. I mean, if a guy builds himself to that point and does it legitimately, you can't do anything about it. But you can put the reins on the ball.
Yeah, but Jay, the problem there, as I alluded to, let's say they produce a ball that goes 50 yards. It goes 50 yards less further. All right.
Right.
Now, so Bryson DeChambeau, let's say for
argument's sake, hits it 20 yards further now. Anyway,
he's 20 yards further. They subtract 50 from the average guy. Subtract 50 from Bryson, and he's still 20 yards longer.
Yeah, you're dead on. No, it's a giant dilemma, and you know we may have to begin to. You know, I mean, 19 under won the golf tournament last week at Muirfield, which is not a cupcake. I mean, we may have to reinvent our ideas about par at the highest level. I don't know, because like you just pointed out, you're dead on. Yeah, scale back the ball. It doesn't change the fact that a guy was hitting it 20 yards further with the ball that went less distance or more distance.
Well, Janice Self, probably the best executive golf producer in the country, brings up a good point. You know, if you cut back the ball or you do whatever to cut back some distance, it will not take away the advantage that Bryson has right now. But no. It would make a very valuable contribution in that it will keep some of our classic golf courses. Competitive. That's all we can hope for, I guess.
No, that's how the debate kind of got started, even before the silly numbers we're seeing then, right? I mean, see now, Janice is right. It was a belief by the USGA and by Mr. Nicklaus that, you know, you weren't going to be able to go to Marion anymore. You weren't maybe going to be able to go to Oakmont. I mean, these are places that are landlocked and there's nowhere to go. And are we going to have to build golf courses out in prairies where there's land so we can build an 8,000-9,000 yard golf course? I mean, that's the way people were thinking. So, you know, that is one factor that would equate to maybe different scoring.
What about windmills on the greens? You think that'll work, Jay?
I think, again, as much as we talk about all the troubles and maybe where we're headed, boy, last Sunday Sunday was sure fun, and nobody was upset with the distance those guys were hitting it or what they were doing.
Well, it's going to be one big week in golf, and just some of the guys that are going to be playing it. Everyone could probably win this event. There are some featured groupings, you know. How about McIlroy, Koepka, and Tiger Woods together? You want some star power? You might want to follow that threesome.
I mean, welcome to the first tee. Goodness gracious. Rory, Brooks, and Tiger. Of course, Tiger pulled out at the Players, and his last start was the Genesis. Koepka, at times he looks like he's starting to build some consistency, and then he loses it. That's what he's looking for, is the consistency. And, oh, Rory, he's got the most top tens at the Memorial Tournament, four. How about this one, Bob? Mickelson, Rose, and Shane Lowry.
Well, Shane Lowry is the only he's the champion golfer of the year by virtue of yep. winning that Open Championship. Justin Rose obviously speaks for itself, and I don't even think we have to say Phil Mickelson. We say lefty. Everybody knows what we're talking about. The one group that I'm going to have my eye on, Jay, about Colin Morikawa right after his victory, Patrick Cantlay, who's defending champion, and Bryson DeChambeau, the unknown factor. Who knows what he's going to do at Muirfield?
Well, this is what is somewhat scary. There's a chance if Rory, Koepka, and Woods were out on the golf course at the same time, some of the young kids might say, let's go see Bryson, Morikawa, and Cantlay. I mean, that tells you a lot about the game. Cantley's the defending champion. Morikawa off the win the week before on the same golf course. He's got one more win than he has missed cuts in his 24 professional starts. That's silly. That's almost not possible. And Bryson, I mean, who knows what he'll do? I don't, that's for sure. And then this trio of the most underrated player of all, Xander Schauffele, all he's done is come back, made the cut and play well in all his four starts. DJ Bob, who got the victory at the 2020 Travelers, extended that streak of winning to 13 consecutive years, or seasons, if you will. Thomas regained a number one spot by not winning a golf tournament last week. I mean, this is the peak of golf's return, and you throw in Jack's place, Jack, Tiger, the young kids, Rory. I mean, this is golf smothered in golf.
Well, I tell you what, if you could overhear some phone calls probably being made by Schauffele, Johnson, and Justin Thomas calling, well, you know what? A lifesaver. I just realized that. They don't have to, you know, under normal conditions, they might not have any fans with the power threesomes that fans would have the choice of watching. But since there are no fans, every one of these groups is going to be equal in the amount of people following them. It couldn't be a better scenario.
Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine being a kid in somewhere 30, 40, an hour from Dublin and getting the chance to see these guys play at Muirfield? It's just a shame, as we mentioned earlier in the show, now through the Tour Championship, no fans. But I'll tell you what, Bob, the ratings and the play numbers across the United States, and I don't see, at least yet, I mean, if golf was leading to, increasing the risk or a rise in viruses, I have to think by now we would have had that study or feeling or knowledge. So golf still seems to be about as safe as it is, and play is up, the ratings are up, and it's a great time to be involved in our game.
And the biggest news in all of golf took place last week out at Lake Tahoe, when on his very last hole, Charles Barkley made a birdie, the first ever in his life, and he's been playing for about 30 years. So congratulations, Sir Charles. That was a heck of a birdie.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.